From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationship with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Thanks for tuning in.
And joining us this morning for the first part of the show is Dr. Adrian Correa, here to talk with us about their coral-related research. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So we want to start with a little bit of a broader picture before we do a deep dive into your research. So let's talk a little bit about what actually a coral is. Can you describe that to us?
Well, if you were swimming in the ocean and you saw one, you might think it was a rock, and that is partially correct. A coral is an animal that lays down a calcium carbonate structure that can look like a mound or a tree branch or a column. And the coral, the living coral animal, is just on the surface of that structure. And so it's an animal, but it also, inside of its tissues, has single-celled algae that are very important to its health.
And as we all know, coral are facing kind of an uphill battle right now as the temperatures in our oceans rise, and the coral kind of haven't been able to adapt to that. Is that right?
Well, the adaptation process is happening, but to me, the question is, you know, will it be fast enough to keep pace mm-hmm. with the changing temperature and other stressors that are happening in the ocean. And you know, we see that process happening with many corals dying, but some surviving to hopefully reproduce and make the next generation.
So why are coral important? What value do they bring, these little single-cell animals, et cetera?
This baffling organism.
Yeah. What value and benefits do they bring to the marine ecosystem?
Well, besides being beautiful to look at and something that humans enjoy visiting to snorkel on or dive on mm-hmm. or fish on, coral reefs play incredibly important roles in that by building these hard structures, they kind of make a city for all of these other organisms, millions and millions of other organisms and species to live inside of. So they form a habitat, kind of like trees make a forest that lots of organisms can live in. Mm-hmm. And this hard structure, particularly when it's close to a coastline, does really important things like break wave energy coming in towards shore to help stabilize shorelines. And additionally, coral reefs are a really important source of, because they support lots of fisheries, they are great for humans that way, as well as other organisms that eat fish.
Okay, so there's a physical benefits as well as obviously the obvious biological benefits. They serve as important nurseries for lots of other animals. You know, we think of, like, say, fish and crustaceans, etc., all use the coral reef as a source of food and as a source of protection, I suppose.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of the organisms on a reef can actually be difficult to see because they are burrowed into the cracks and crevices of those coral colonies themselves. So there are lots of organisms hiding beyond what you will see in a beautiful picture of a reef or if you swim over one.
So I think, you know, like you said, humans love coral reefs. We love to see them, snorkel, dive, and appreciate them. But there's been, you know, a lot of talk and a lot of disappointment about the change that these reefs are undergoing, you know, whether they're bleaching or dying. But your research actually provides a little bit of hope that we may be able to sort of assist this species with its adaptation. So give us an overview of your research.
Okay, well, in terms of this research that I'm doing, my group works a lot on not just these single-celled algae that live inside of coral tissues, but also bacteria and viruses, because just like humans, they have bacteria and viruses, there are bacteria and viruses living on coral colonies. Hmm. And all of these microorganisms together influence the health of the coral colony that we see. And so these single-celled algae are really important because they photosynthesize just like a plant you would see on land, and the sugars that they make with light energy from the sun, they release a lot of that into the coral tissue. And so the coral, beyond eating little particles out of the water column, the coral actually gets a lot of its energy from these photosynthesized sugars that the algae in its tissues releases to it. And so when we think about how we might be able to help a coral colony, you know, assist its evolution to get it to have a greater temperature tolerance as seas are warming due to climate change, people are thinking not just about whether or not we can assist with the evolution of the coral animal itself, but also whether we can accelerate adaptation in those algae that live in the coral tissues. Because in fact, the algae have a much faster generation time, so they reproduce much on a quicker time scale than the coral does. For example, on a scale of a few months for the algae compared to a year, once a year for the corals. And so if we can help the algae evolve temperature tolerance more quickly, and then we can get those algae to live inside of coral colonies, for example, coral babies that are just taking up their algae for the first time, then we might be able to help make like a super coral colony that's more temperature resistant. But there are some challenges there too.
Okay, well, let's I'll ask the obvious.
That's right.
What are the challenges? Good question, Chris.
Well, one of them is that you can't just get any algae to live in a relationship inside the coral tissues. So it's not that...
Even in coral, know, if we can, Dr. Correa, sorry, even in coral, relationship issues.
Yes, there's always a challenge, right? And the longer the partnership, sometimes the harder the challenge, right?
Okay.
So to some extent, certain coral species are going to be easier to get different kinds of algae into potentially, either as babies or maybe even when they are adult colonies. But there are going to be some limits there. And then additionally, even if we can get these temperature tolerant algae to live inside of a coral colony, it's not going to be an unlimited increase in temperature tolerance. We can't keep continuing on as we have been in terms of climate change and have, you know, temperatures continue to increase and have the algal evolution continue to keep pace with warming seas. So this is really kind of like a stopgap or a band-aid effort to keep as many corals alive as possible while we all deal with our climate change issues.
Right.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dr. Adrienne Correa, Assistant Professor of Biosciences at Rice University. And she's joining us, of course, to talk about coral and their work with the small organisms that help coral thrive. So give us a sense of, you know, how much temperature change these could help, you know, the sort of these new organisms could help the coral adapt to.
Well, in out on reefs, we sometimes have seen if a coral has changed the dominant kind of algae that it has. Sometimes that can be associated with a degree and a half Celsius of increased temperature tolerance. And some of the latest experiments people have done where they've been growing this algae in culture in a lab over time and exposing it to high temperatures to select for temperature tolerance, they've seen better performance at up to 3 degrees Celsius over a 2.5 year period. So that is a really exciting advance. And if we can get better at encouraging these algae to have sex, for example, in lab conditions, then maybe we can even push that farther. And so that's one of the reasons that we were excited that we were able to visualize sex in these algal cells for the first time.
Yeah, explain this a little bit to us. I saw, you know, in your research, it was like the first time that it's been confirmed and visualized in coral. How did you do this, and what are you actually like able to observe?
Well, it really partially is a numbers game, and having better tools to use in looking at these cells in the first place. So there are one of the challenges in pinpointing that sex is happening is catching differences in how much DNA is present in a given cell, and then matching that up with other characteristics of the cell itself. So like the shape of the cell, the presence of some other parts of the cell in different places, and matching that up to tease apart whether it's sexual reproduction or whether it's a cell that's just dividing via mitosis, where there wouldn't be genetic exchange. And so one of the, you know, so really what we've been able to do in our study is visualize what foundational studies from the 1960s had inferred, was that sex must be happening. And we were able to see it with basically by staining the DNA of cells and then putting them through a machine that can detect differences, up to a fourfold difference in how much DNA is present within an individual cell, and then sort those cells based on, is there basically like 1x, 2x, or 2 to 4x the amount of DNA that we would expect. And then when we take that sort of 2 to 4 times amount of DNA, those are the ones that we think, that we suspected were undergoing sex. And so then we took those, like that special bin where we had sorted all those cells, and we were able to put them on a confocal microscope after staining their nuclei, and then we could see these images. So that was really exciting.
Okay.
That's very cool.
I think I followed that, but what really resonated with me is, if I heard you right, somebody's been walking around since the 60s suggesting that these algae were having sex, hypothesizing that, but it wasn't until your research came along and the level of technology was available that this could be shown or observed?
Mm-hmm. And this has really been the story for lots of dinoflagellate species as well, for lots of these algae, the ones that both live in corals, and then there are many, many species that live free swimming in the ocean. And so, you know, the story has, the way that we've thought of these algae is that that most of them don't have sex. And then gradually over time, we've found new ways to look and are increasingly able to detect sex in, for example, 200 out of the 2,000 known algae species so far. And then we basically applied those methods from the free living algae to these algae in the corals and found it. Yeah.
Okay. So the genetic exchange from the algae that are having sex is what we're really looking for. And that's what's helping to sort of develop or helping them faster adapt to increasing temperatures, right?
Yes, because if you're just having regular cell division, you're essentially making a clone or a copy of whatever genetic material was present in that cell. And the only way that you would get something new is if there was a mutation or an error in that cell division process. Mm. But when you have sex, you are recombining the genetic diversity that's present on the chromosomes of the cells, and so you get this accelerated process of remixing your genetic content that can lead to sometimes something advantageous.
So how do you find or select for the more successful, I guess, strains or individuals after this process?
Well, now that we have found sex or now that we really have a good search image and a way of visualizing it in these algae, now we could go and do this in the type of experiment I was describing before, where you might take a culture of these algae growing in the lab and just expose them to some type of stress, like high temperature. And over time, the ones that survive, you're weeding out the things that can't tolerate that high temperature. Mm. And, you know, for example, over 2 years, you might end up with algae that are much better at tolerating the high temperatures.
And
could go and look at sex in that process.
Okay, and sorry. I want to add too, because climate change is not only expressing itself in warmer temperature, water temperatures, but it's also expressing itself in lower pH, so slightly more acidic waters, which also has grave consequences on coral reefs.
Mm-hmm. There are, in fact, many, and it's not just the climate change impact, it's also nutrient pollution from fertilizer runoff,
right,
and other things. Nutrient stress, typically it's low nutrient stress, is sometimes a reason that you'll see these types of algae in general increasing the amount of sex that they're having. So there is essentially a whole set of environmental factors that we can now, carefully compare and look for differences in the amount of cells that are having sex. So then theoretically, we could come up with a set of conditions that we could apply in an assisted evolution context to try to make sex go as fast as possible in these algae.
And right now, this is inside the lab that this work is going on. How does this get transported into an actual reef? The engineering applications of it, the larger scale applications of it.
Oh yeah, scaling up.
Yeah. Did we lose her?
Lunch.
Oh, there you
so
are.
There,
sorry,
oh,
we just lost
oh, sorry.
You for a second. You ended at scaling up. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are many challenges along the way with this process.
Right.
You know, first, you need to be able to ideally get corals themselves to reproduce in the lab so that you could do assisted evolution on them and get those growing in a nursery setting. Then you could assist evolution with these algae and add the algae to your super coral animals, get those little baby colonies to grow up enough so that they are likely to survive better when you move them out to the reef. And then you would take them out to the reef in what is, as you might imagine, a pretty laborious process to take them all out there carefully and cement them onto the reef. And then you have to hope that they survive that process. And, you know, there are additional challenges. For example, there are coral-eating fish and snails and things, and they, for some reason, often the coral-eating fish often seem to be attracted to these small new corals. And so we are making progress, and we need to keep investing in this challenge and move forward as fast as we can. But, you know, for example, finding sex or making progress doesn't mean we can all sit back and relax and say, oh, okay, well, now the corals will be fine with climate change. We have a ways to go.
Right. And real quick, I find it also fascinating that coral reefs, like I guess any other ecosystem, suffers from viruses. There are marine-based viruses that impact these reefs as well.
Yes, there are. And, you know, we see lots of different kinds of viruses living in these coral colonies.
Hmm.
And on one hand, that's not too surprising, given that a coral colony has the coral animal in it. It's got these algae, which also can be infected by viruses, and bacteria, which also can be infected by viruses. So we do see lots of viruses, lots of different kinds of viruses in these colonies. One of the real challenges is not is to not immediately assume that they are all doing something harmful to a member of the coral colony, because there are other examples in which a viral infection can contribute genes to the host of the virus, or sometimes in other systems even impart some thermal tolerance. So we, you know, we definitely have a lot to learn about, you know, if some viruses are causing disease, and maybe if some viruses are even playing other roles in a coral colony.
Well, we have to wrap up, Dr. Correa. Where could people go to actually read the paper, read the research you're doing, and learn more about the work you're doing at Rice University?
Oh, well, you could Google Adrian Correa Lab at Rice University to find my lab's website. And this article about the algae sex is freely available, open access, at the journal Scientific Reports.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and we're going to stay tuned for the next step in your research.
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of This Green Earth.
And if you did, we hope you'll take a minute to rate us, share us, and leave a comment.
You can email us your thoughts and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Join us next week on This Green Earth.